About 14 or 15, I think it was 12, 14 years ago, I was doing a wedding for a couple. And at the rehearsal, the bride was a wreck. And when I say wreck, that is an insult to wrecks everywhere. This girl was in full meltdown mode about everything at the rehearsal. And so she was crying. And so I said, let's go take a time out. Let's take a time out. So we went out in the foyer of the church I was doing the wedding at. We went out in the foyer and I said, what's wrong? And she said, nothing's going right. And I said, it's a rehearsal. That's the point of rehearsal. It's not supposed to go right tonight. It's supposed to go right tomorrow. She goes, you don't understand. And I went, okay, I've been married for a long time. Why don't I understand? She goes, because you're a man and y'all don't care. At which point her fiance was like, yep, there it is, you know. So I looked at her and I said, I want to ask you a question. I said, I just want to ask you a question. I said, maybe we can get through this thing together. She said, okay. I said, what is the object? Are you eating a Bojangles biscuit while I'm telling, my daughter's just eating, she's sitting there eating a biscuit while I'm talking.
It's my breakfast.
Now I'm just totally distracted. Okay, so, by the way, if you hadn't had breakfast, Sam's got some biscuit left. Please feel free to come up and get some, come on, Monty, come on over and get some. So, I looked at this young lady. I was talking about a wedding, right? I looked at this young lady and I said, what is the object of tomorrow? I said, what is the object of tomorrow? She goes, well, to get married. I said, right. And what has happened tonight to make you think that tomorrow is going to be a failure? You're going to be married tomorrow, right? She goes, well, yeah. I said, then what's the problem? She stops. I said, so let's re-ask the question. What is the object of tomorrow really? And then she said it. To have a better wedding than my bridesmaid? And I don't know, some of you may be sitting there with this shocked, appalled look on your face. The only thing you should be shocked and appalled about is that she had the guts to say it. Because if you've ever been, everyone in this room has probably been to a wedding where there was an effort made in that wedding to be better than the previous wedding that everybody went to. This used to happen in the child's birthday party circuit. We always were the ones who broke the cycle. We've took the kids to birthday parties where, like, horses appeared. There were pony rides. We went to places where they rented buildings that was like, why would you rent a bowling alley for a 10-year-old's birthday? Because we can. I'm sure at some point a clown showed up at one. I mean, you know how this, if those of you who have kids in the birthday circuit, you know exactly what I mean. And then when it's time for your kid to have the birthday, this is what you hear. We got to be better than the last one. And that's when the husband goes, no, we don't. We're going to break the cycle right now. So you guys know how this works. But the whole issue was that this girl had forgotten that the purpose of the wedding was just to get married. And she had made it about so many other things that she was actually not enjoying her own wedding. Now, some of you probably can think back to weddings where you've seen this happen, where there was so much pressure. By the way, I'm hearing an echo. Can you turn me down a little bit? Fantastic. Almost. There we go. Is that better? Yeah. Okay. Thank you. So you've all probably been to weddings where this happened, where there was so much pressure to get everything perfect. And I always tell couples in premarital, it's like, that weddings are never perfect because you can't control everybody in the room. Because I've been to the wedding where the kid threw up in the aisle right before the wedding on a hot summer day when the air conditioner wasn't working really well in the church. I've been to the wedding where somebody got a nosebleed in the middle of the wedding. I've been to the wedding where the ring bearer kicked over the candelabra and caught the carpet on fire. By the way, that was fantastic. That was amazing. So you know, when I've seen at this point, I don't want to say I've seen it all because that makes me fearful of what I might see because just to prove a point. But the point is that sometimes we create such obscene expectations for events that that we forget what the event really is about. And I would say to you this morning that probably a lot of us have done that with Christmas. That we've made it such an event that really has nothing to do with the real event, which is the real event is the celebration of the birth of Christ. But we've tied all these other things into it, and we judge the holiday based on the success of the other stuff. Now, guess what happens December 25th, no matter how your plans go? It's still Jesus' birthday, right? You're still celebrating his birth. And so all the ancillary stuff really doesn't have anything to do with the actual event itself. Now, we're going to look at a passage this morning from Luke chapter 2, very familiar passage. We're going to start in verse 8. This is where the angels come, and I want you to catch some of the irony in what the angels say in this message to the shepherds and what we have actually done to the holiday. It says, but at the same region there were some shepherds staying out in the fields and keeping watch over their flock by night, and an angel of the Lord suddenly stood before them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were terribly frightened. But the angel said to them, do not be afraid, for behold, I bring you good news of great joy, which will be for all people. Did you know that the Christmas holidays mark the highest peak of depression and suicide in the United States? A holiday that was started by a group of angels saying, we've come to bring you good news of great joy, which will be for everybody. How many of you have struggled with your joy this holiday season? Now, if you've been shopping, I would argue you probably have already struggled with your joy. I was out shopping the other day, and I heard a lady go. She was standing there, and she was looking at an empty shelf where something she wanted to buy used to sit, and now it was gone. And she uttered these words, this is the worst Christmas ever. And I thought, you haven't lived long enough. But that was her attitude, because there was a shortage of some things. This was going to be an awful Christmas. I saw a lady a few weeks ago that was, you can't make this stuff up. She was in a store complaining that we don't keep Christ in Christmas enough. She was wearing a Rudolph sweater. She was wearing elf ears. And she had a string of Christmas lights around her neck. And she was complaining that other people don't keep Christ in Christmas. Now, the minister in me wanted to say something. The person who feared getting tased decided not to. But here's the reality. You may have said this yourself, or you've probably heard other people say it. And the reality is, who influences whether you keep Christ in your Christmas or not? You do. It doesn't have anything to do with anybody else. We talk about how Christmas has become so commercialized and how it's become so secular, but who's done that to it? We have. Hey, nobody can do that for you. Nobody puts a gun to your head and makes you watch the Christmas specials that aren't about Jesus. Nobody ties you to a chair in front of the Hallmark Channel to watch 46 movies with the same plot. None of you are forced to do that. Nobody makes you go. Rudy's going, actually, I have been tied to the chair. Tammy, tie you to the chair, make you watch those, Rudy? Rudy's like, I don't even watch that stuff. It's all about Jesus for me. I don't watch any of that Hallmark stuff. Nobody makes us do this stuff. We are responsible for getting into these things and to creating these expectations of the holiday, which when they don't go as planned, we're unhappy and we're depressed. And all of you have probably had a Christmas where you didn't get the present you really wanted, and it made you sad. Or something happened that, you know, travel stuff got messed up and certain family couldn't get there. And look, I get it. My kids are off in college now, so we get really excited when the kids come home. Some of us more than others. Stephanie cried the other night when the kids came home early and surprised her. I was in on that, by the way. But that was cool. And we get excited when we go to my dad's house for Christmas, and then we have her family over after Christmas. And that's really important to us. It's family. And if that didn't work out right, we'd be disappointed. But the truth is that we have created this thing at the holiday season, which frequently, and I would say all too frequently, isn't really about Jesus at all. It's about all the other stuff. Now, I want to be clear this morning. I'm not up here saying that there's anything wrong with giving presents and watching Rudolph. I watch Rudolph every Christmas. I will probably watch it again. There's nothing wrong with those things. But the reality is when we create that thing, it's really not proper for us to complain about it when we participate in it, and in a lot of cases, encourage it. And as a result, what we see now is a holiday that is marked by sadness and frustration and depression and anxiety on an event where the angels proclaimed, "This is going to be good news of great joy for everybody." And yet, so many people struggle to find any joy in the holiday season, which is really, really unfortunate. All right, moving on there, he says, "Don't be afraid, because I bring you good news of great joy, which will be for all people. For today in the city of David, there has been born for you a Savior who is Christ the Lord. And this will be a sign for you. You will find a baby wrapped in clothes and lying in a manger." Now, I want you to take a minute and think about the whole concept of the manger. Now, I'm sure by this point, most of you, if not all of you, know what a manger is. It's a feed trough. That's all it is. It's a feed trough that was used for animals that would have been common in that day, probably mules or donkeys, maybe some sheep. But that's what a manger was. It was a food trough. Now, imagine as Mary and Joseph get to the inn, and there's no room in the inn, but there is this place out in the back where the animals stay. How many of you have ever worked in a pen where animals are kept? Okay. Steve, you have? Steve, in as polite a terminology as you can, what does that smell like? Eastern North Carolina. It smells like Eastern North Carolina. Thank you. Thank you, Steve. Well, barbecue. It smells like barbecue, Steve. If any of you have ever worked in a stable of any kind, you know what happens in stables? You know what animals do in stables? Well, you'd know what animals do in stables. So, you know, we have this really romanticized view of what it must have been like to be in the stable. Let's be honest for a minute. The stable stunk. It stunk. It's got hay in there, which is probably damp. There's probably animal mess in that that's got to be cleaned out. A food trough, food for those animals usually is not. Remember, you didn't go and buy a bag of Purina sheep chow back then. That's not how that worked. So a food trough would not have probably been the cleanest, nicest smelling thing in the world. You're in a stable that's full of, you get it. And so this is the area that Jesus is going to be born in and spend his first night in. Probably first several nights. Now, you think about that, and what does it, you know, on some level, you read that and go, so Christmas is really about sacrifice. It's about not having much. Is that how you mark your Christmas? By the absence of stuff? What is Christmas in America marked by now? How much stuff? How much stuff? Presents and we gifts and Santa and all this stuff, and there's stuff under the tree, and you're going to open presents with this family, then you're going to go open presents over here, and we sit there and go, and look, sometimes we get stuff and you're like, I don't know what this is. Six, 7 years ago, I got a blow dryer for this. I got a. By the way, if you think that I'm making that up, Stephanie, can I get a witness? I got a blow dryer. By the way, my daughter really enjoyed it. I think she used it. I can really towel dry this. Sometimes we get presents. I'm sure I gave my father a seashell 1 year that lit up because I was in college and I didn't have any money. So I gave him, I'll never forget, he took it out and he goes, what? And I said, oh, no, plug it in. So he plugged it in and then he was like, that's so much better. An illuminated seashell. It was a big shell, by the way. It wasn't a small, it was a big one. We've all gotten presents that were like, someone was not thinking this through very clearly when they got me this. But that's kind of, the holiday has become so much about, it's like the food, because the food is fantastic. Those imported butter cookies are the greatest thing in the world. And they have no calories. That's what I tell myself anyway. There's no calories in those, so I could eat a whole 10 of those and it's fine. How many of you are going to have a meal with family Christmas Eve, Christmas Day? At least one. Yeah, look at that. And it's probably not going to be a tuna helper or hamburger helper. It's probably going to be something extravagant. It's certainly not going to be, Larry the Cable Guy tuna helper, which is a real thing I found out this morning. We have a big meal, and really our holiday is about excess. And yet when we look at the scripture and we go back and we read about what initiated this holiday, it's about the creator of the universe who humbled himself and came to earth as an infant and was born in a smelly, stinky stable and spent his first night in a food trough. Is that the Christmas that we commemorate every year? So it said, this is going to be a sign for you. You're going to find a baby wrapped in clothes and lying in a manger. And suddenly there appeared with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host praising God and saying, I did stop at 13. Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace to men with whom he is well pleased. I think I got that right. Yep, there it is. Okay, there it is. I think that was my fault. I told Catherine to stop at 13. Sorry about that, Catherine. But that's the whole concept, right? It's all about worship. Just for you to question, ask yourself, how much of the holiday season would you say, for you individually, is about worship? Now, when you start calculating the shopping and the travel and the eating and the Hallmark Channel and all the other stuff that goes with the holiday season, and you start figuring it out and go, how much of it is about worship? Now, we had a worship service Thursday night. Now, I'm guessing here, because I've been doing this a long time, so I would guess that somebody probably left Thursday night going, why didn't we sing any of the fun songs? We didn't sing Rudolph. We didn't sing, and the answer is, because that was a worship service. It was just about worship. It wasn't about the fun songs. It was about worship. We had a night of worship. But you start asking yourself this question, how much of my holiday is really about worshiping the baby who came to save me from my sins? And we start, you know, and I would guess it's like a lot of things. If we really sat down and we really figured it out, we really sat down and went, well, it's been this much. And does church on the 19th count? It is Christmas season, so we'll give you the 19th. I'll even give you the 12th. I'll give you the 12th. If you get the 12th and the 19th, what about the 26th? That's the day after Christmas. Yeah, we'll throw that in. Okay, well, there's a few hours. How much time outside of actual church will you spend worshiping this Christmas? That is, some of you may say, Stuart, we spend a lot of time doing that as a family, as an individual. That may be, and that's fantastic if you do. But the truth is, a lot of us probably would go, man, if I sat down and logged the time, I'd be really shocked at how little of my Christmas time is actually dedicated to Christ. And yet when I see a sign that says Xmas, I get offended. And when I see the secularization of Christmas, I get offended. But really, am I playing into that narrative in my own life? And Christmas has become so busy and so hectic. And for a lot of us, some of you probably have your Christmas day is already completely booked up. How many of you are going to be at two different places at least on Christmas Day? Two different houses. You're going to be, well, I got to go to this house, and then we got to pack up and go to that house. We've been doing this for years with my family, my wife's family, and trying to figure out where we're going to be on which day and how we're going to schedule it out. And I'll be the first to admit, there have been plenty of Christmases that when Christmas was over, there probably had not been as much attention to Jesus as there should have been. Now, let me ask you a question. What would happen if you had a birthday party and everybody came over to your house for your birthday and nobody talked to you? They came over and enjoyed the food. They talked to other people, but nobody talked to you, and you didn't get any attention at all at your birthday party. How many of you would be bothered by that? I would guess most of us would sit there and go, this was the worst birthday ever. All these people came to my house for my birthday, and none of them talked to me. None of them acknowledged me. Nobody even came over to wish me happy birthday. They just talked about how old I looked and how my wife looks like my daughter now. You know, it's like I didn't get any presents. It was almost like I wasn't there. Now, look, we shouldn't expect better from the secular world, from people who aren't Christians. We shouldn't expect better from them because they're not Christians. Why would they? But when we throw, and let's be honest, I mean, the 12 days of Christmas, let's be real. Christmas starts the day after Thanksgiving, unless you're at Cracker Barrel, which it starts in September. But if when you look at the holiday and what we've made out of it, we've created this monstrosity that lasts, what, a month? Christmas lasts a month now? We throw a month-long birthday party for Jesus and barely acknowledge him. Does that make sense to you? It wouldn't make sense to you if it was your party and everybody came over and celebrated your birthday and yet nobody acknowledged you at all during that party. You wouldn't feel like that was a good birthday. You'd be like, I don't know, what was the point? What was the point of a big birthday party where nobody acknowledged me? And this is the monster that we've created. And we blame it on other people, but let's be real. We're the ones who have done it. We've created this. We've created, and again, there's nothing wrong with the season and the celebration. But at the end of the day, if we've gotten through the Christmas season and we haven't put aside any time to worship the person who the season is about, what does that say about us? And what does it say about what we've done to his birthday? Do any of you know why we have holidays, generally speaking, in America? Why, well, anywhere in the world, but since we're in America, we'll talk about America. Does anybody know why we have holidays in America? So we can get off from work, take a day off from work. We have just a couple, President's Day. Anybody know who President's Day is supposed to commemorate? Washington and Lincoln. It's not every president, I promise you. And originally, Washington and Lincoln, it was to commemorate their birthdays. Okay. The irony of that is most people celebrate President's Day, you know, if they get off from work, they don't even know which president it's about. Veterans Day, Memorial Day have a specific purpose. We now have Martin Luther King Day, which is meant to commemorate his life and his work in civil rights. We have all these holidays. Thanksgiving is a day set aside so we'll remember to be what? Why do we need a day to remind us to be thankful in the richest country in the world? And so at some point, someone decided we need a day to remind us to celebrate Jesus' birth. We don't know when Jesus was really born. By the way, I found out an interesting thing in getting ready for this sermon. Did anybody know why Christmas is on December 25th? And the answer is, according to sources that I researched, at some point there were people in the church who believed that Jesus was conceived on the spring equinox, which was the end of winter and the beginning of spring. And guess what day falls 9 months after the spring equinox? December 25th. Ta-da! You're welcome. For those of you who didn't know that. Now, is that true? I don't know. It's just something I read on the internet. But everything on the internet's true, so there you go. But we've created this holiday, and it reminds me a lot of what the Pharisees did with the Sabbath. You remember, over time, as there were more and more and more rules about the Sabbath, and it got bigger and bigger and bigger, and the law got heavier and heavier and heavier over time. It didn't start that way, but this is what it became. That's kind of Christmas. Christmas was originally a day set aside just to remember the birth of Jesus. And over time, all these things have gotten added to it. And it's created this incredible expectation. And look, Christmas is my favorite time of the year. And when do I start listening to Christmas music? October. I do. Jamie will tell you. Yes, he does. He sits in the office and has to hear it. I love Christmas. I love everything about Christmas. If my sinuses weren't messed up in the winter, this would be the best time of the year. I love Christmas. I love having the tree up, and I'll leave the tree up till February if my wife will let me. I love everything about it. But you know what? I am as guilty as anybody else about creating this expectation about the season that all too often includes everything but the actual reason for it. And so this morning, here's what I would challenge you to do. And I'm going to ask the praise team if they would to come up and get ready to lead us in our communion hymn. Here's the challenge for you today. Today is December 19th. We are 6 days out from Christmas. So here's my challenge for you. Set aside some time for Jesus during his birthday party. This week long, we've got a week left. Set aside some time for him. Set aside some time for worship. Set aside some time for prayer, for reflection, so that when his birthday comes and then goes, you won't look back on the season and feel like, I went to a birthday party for Jesus and never spoke to him. I didn't acknowledge him. I didn't talk to him. I was just there for the party. Don't look back at your Christmas and feel like that. It's a simple thing to set aside some time every day. Hey, I'm going to set aside some time before bed or when I first get up. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to listen to maybe a couple of religious Christmas songs, some of the stuff we do in church. Maybe I'll listen to a couple of those. Maybe I'll sing them in my head. Maybe I'll have a time of prayer. Maybe I'll sit down and read my Bible for a few minutes and take some time during this season to make sure that Christ is central to the season. Because the reality is nobody is responsible for Christ being in your Christmas but you. The world's not responsible for it. The government's not responsible for it. The church isn't responsible for it. Ultimately, that responsibility falls on you, for you and your family. Christ will only be in Christmas if you put him there and you make him the central point of the season.